Okay, so this Maimer from the Rebbe was delivered in the year 1987, January 87, and it's based on the Haftorah of this week's portion. The Haftorah, which is a collection from the prophecies of Isaiah, Yeshayahu HaNavi, begin with the words Haboyim Yashresh Yankiv. So Haboyim means coming. Yashresh, the word Yashresh comes from the terminology of to take root, from shorish. But usually when things take root, they first have to dissolve or rot. So Haboyim Yashresh, they're coming and taking root. Jacob is taking root. Yotzitz Ufarach Yisrael. Israel then flowers. Israel then sprouts and flowers. Umolo Pnei Tevel Tenuva, the panorama, if you will, is filled with produce. So something takes root, something sprouts, something flowers, and then the field is full. A euphemism, obviously, a metaphor. But this is the way Isaiah opens the prophecy that heralds this week's Haftorah. Umavur b'mefarshim. So the mefarshim, the commentaries, explain that the word haboyim, haboyim yashresh, it starts off with haboyim, those who are coming, they're coming and taking root. So this is hine, Tevas haboyim koi al tevas haboyim shabereish parshas shmois. That there is a natural and organic link between the opening of the parsha and the opening of the haftorah. The haftorah begins, the parsha begins. The elu shmois b'nei Yisrael. These are the children of, the names of the children of Israel. Haboyim mitzayim, who are coming into Egypt. And we have the same word, the same dynamic expression. Haboyim yashresh shankiv, coming and taking root. So we have a link between the parsha and between the haftorah. The elu shmeis bnei Yisrael haboyim mitzrayim. Behainu, that is to say, the pasuk zeh, that this verse that Isaiah employs, medaber bebias bnei Yisrael mitzrayim. Actually, it speaks to the Jewish people's arrival in Egypt. In other words, Isaiah metaphorically describes the arrival of our ancestors in Mitzrayim. How does he describe it? As yashresh, as taking root. Because haboyim is the Jewish people coming into Egypt. That's the only other time we have the word haboyim. So here it says haboyim. Haboyim, the ones who are coming, which we understand immediately. Ones who are coming refers back to going into Mitzrayim. So haboyim, the ones who are coming, are yashresh. The ones who are coming are sinking roots. It's taking root. Okay. So v'yedua ha-diyuk b'zeh b'maymer admur ha-zokin. We have a diuk from the Alter Rebbe's Maimer. The Alter Rebbe was the Baal Hilula. This Maimer was recited on the 23rd day of Tevis, which is Erev, the day before the day of the Alter Rebbe's Yom Hilula. In his Sefer Torah Ur, which is the collection of Memorim, the foundational Memorim on the Parshiot of the week, Sheyesh Gambir al Hadrush v'achakach oy tesefes bir. This was something that the Alter Rebbe apparently spoke of often, and he delved into this many times, because there is not one but two additional commentaries or explanations printed in Torah. Uba Arucha, and at great length, Bedrusha Rabbesein Nusseino Shal Achreze, in the Hasidic discourses and teachings of the Rebbe's that followed in generationally. The Tzarech Lahavin. So what's the issue? Where does this journey begin? The journey begins with a need to understand Shaychas HaInyanim Zeh LaZeh. What does Yashresh, what does root, roots or taking root, what does dissolving or rotting, what does that have to do with going to Mitzrayim? How is there a connection? How is going to Mitzrayim in some way metaphorized or likened to the notion of sinking roots or of a plant or a bulb that's dissolving in order for the future sprouting and flowering? That's the question. Gam Tzarech Lahavin, what also needs to be understood is the fact that this verse can be divided very easily and naturally into three individual segments. There's like three levels. There's number one, there's this concept of yashresh. So yashresh is a verb. It's taking root. The taking root is Yaakov. Yaakov takes root. The next segment of the verse is Yotzitz Uforach. Two words, two verbs. And these two verbs, so the first segment is haboyim, the verb of coming, and then after they're coming, yashresh, taking root. In the second set, there are yotzitz uforach, sprouting or blossoming, and that's Yisrael. So we sprout and blossom and that's the name Israel. V'acharkach, and afterwards, malei pnei tevel tenuva, then everything, the whole field, is full of produce. So we have Yaakov, and that's for Yashresh. We have Yisrael for Yatzitzufarach, and then we have what's followed by this extraordinary yield. And what does that mean? What is the point of this kind of phased metaphor with three different increments, three different levels in which the teaching is being conveyed? Ach oinyan. So the thing is like this. Dehinei pasuk ze koi bechlolos ayiridus haneshama beguf. This verse, overarchingly speaking, generally speaking, this verse speaks about the descent of the soul from its origin in a very high place, as we'll see in a moment, into the guf, into the body, the repository that holds the soul for the course of one's terrestrial lifetime. Which this is, as the Gemara in Chagiga tells us, when it describes, even the Talmud describes this journey, this transformation, as, quote, me'igra rama, from a great mountain summit, a great peak, labira amikta, to a very low vale. So, on the topography of planet Earth, the highest points on Earth are mountains. The lowest points on Earth would be valleys, or even lower, like the lowest of valleys. So, for example, the lowest point in North America is a place called Death Valley. And that's it's a desert, very low. In Israel, it's not really a valley, but it kind of is. It's the area of the Dead Sea Panorama, where the Yam HaMelech is. That's in fact, the lowest point on Earth. But it is kind of like a valley. Not an immediate valley, but there's a downward slope. So there are hills. Hills in Jerusalem, hills in Hebron. There are hills outside the area of that panorama. And then everything slopes down. So this is a metaphor, since that's the highest and lowest points on planet Earth. That's the typography that we're familiar with. So the Talmud employs that typographical kind of metaphor, because we don't have a metaphor from heaven to earth. The neshama is not in Mars. The neshama doesn't live in Jupiter. So we can't say, oh, you know how far it is? It's as far from the celestial bodies, from the stars, the planets to Earth. But that doesn't mean anything to us, especially because once upon a time, we had no way of measuring that even. Let's just be honest. It wasn't something we could actualize. It wasn't something we could actually like see or appreciate. But a person could be on a mountain summit. He could climb Mount McKinley. He could go down to the lowest point, the lowest valley. So that's an immediate metaphor. So this is the metaphor that the Talmud employs for the description of the descent of the soul. Now this verse is speaking. Habayim Yashresh, broadly speaking, refers not only to the Jewish people going into Mitzrayim, but broadly speaking, this refers to the concept of the neshama coming down from its high place down into earth. Va'ad shahayirida mimokim kaze shalomayla migeder igra. Truth be told, though, this metaphor is lame. How far are the mountain peaks, the mountain summit, how far is that from the valley? How far is it? I mean, it's not that far. It can be done by a person, one person, without the aid of technology, can go from the highest mountain point and come to the lowest point. So really, in truth, it's a metaphor that's limited. And we understand that the highest heights are far higher than mountain summits, far greater than the Himalayas. And when we speak about the lowest point on Earth, however low you can imagine that to be, however low the typography of this planet dips, the low that follows the neshama after it's in its highest form to be trapped in a body to come into this physical world is much lower than that. In other words, Hainu Yirida Gedeila Shalei Be'erech, an enormous descent of two poles that really aren't even in the same scale. Two extraordinary poles. The neshama goes from extraordinarily high place to an extraordinarily low place. A shockingly, an astonishing difference. Astonishing journey. V'tachlis Yirida Zu. So what's the point? Why would you take the soul and put it to those kind of rigors? Send it from the greatest of heights to the greatest of depths. To the point that there's almost no comparison. There is no comparison between the way the soul lives on high and between the kind of life that the soul is forced to adopt here below. What's the point?
Is it shocked when it
gets here? The soul is totally shocked. And it's not very happy, by the way. That's why we have different customs, like a Shalom Zachar. A woman doesn't fall as low. She doesn't have an arla. She doesn't need a bris milah. So she doesn't need a party. A boy falls so low that the neshama, especially the first Shabbos, he feels like an E.T. phone home. He's like very unhappy. So we make him a little party, and it's like, you know, it's like a joyous shiva call. We say, don't worry about it. We've been stuck around there, banging around for the last couple of decades. It's not so bad, you know. There's some good things to be accomplished there. But what is the point? What is the purpose?
See how far it can raise up.
Oh, not just how far, but in order to create, to catalyze that tremendous elevation. In other words, this Yirida Gedoila, Shaloi Berech, this incredibly astonishing fall is Tachlis Yirida Zu. The ultimate goal and purpose is Letzorich Aliyah, for the purpose of an elevation. That's why it goes through this fall. It's so it will receive an elevation. Kidafke Oilam Hazah Tachtein, specifically this lower world, Koshorim Atzmo Sumahus, Ein Seif Baruch Hu, because this world is connected to the essence of divinity. Everything else is just what we would call the effulgence of divinity, what a spin-off. It's not the essence of divinity. This world is where the essence of divinity is to be found. When you talk about the essence of divinity, obviously we have no language. We have no metaphor. We have no frame of reference. We don't know what we're talking about. But here's what we can say. Ein lo ilo v'siba shekadma lechas v'shalom. There is nothing that creates it. So every level of godliness and divinity is created by a higher level. And then we get to the essence of God, and nothing can be creating God. The essence of God, it comes, so to speak, from itself. It doesn't have a creator. Kimavur Bekam Mekemis has explained in many places. So where's the only other place? What's the only other world that actually feels and senses total independence? As if nothing created it. The only kind of creatures that can yell and scream, we are an accident, nothing is responsible for our creation, are the creatures living in this planet. Only in planet Earth, only here in this Milky Way galaxy, only in the material terrestrial world, which really includes all the galaxies, only in this material terrestrial world is it possible to be in a state of total denial. Otherwise, in the higher worlds, in the angelic worlds, it's not possible to be in a state of total denial, because the angelic worlds are aware of a higher reality that powers them and fuels them. It's only in this world that we're not aware of that, to the point that this world then becomes a reflection of the truest essence of divinity. Only this world. So this is why Haboyim, the beginning of the Haftorah, which speaks about coming, and employs the verb yashresh, rotting, dissolving, taking root, shedafke b'mitzrayim, that refers to Egypt specifically. Why Egypt? Why does, if we speak about the neshama coming down to earth, if the point of this verse is to describe the descent of the soul, the neshama, then why do we have to metaphorize that along the lines of going into Egypt or Egyptian exile? Why can't we say habayim, just coming? What's the emphasis on Egypt? And the answer is that Egypt represents the lowest point on earth, even though typographically it's the Dead Sea, it's a piece of Israel that's lower. That's not the point. Proverbially speaking, Egypt represents tachten shein tachten lamata imenu. Egypt represented the lowest ebb, lowest spiritual fall. Why? Well, perhaps think about it this way. In Egypt, they would mummify bodies. So most of the ancient world believed in the eternity of the soul. They didn't believe in monotheism, but they believed in gods. And they believed in what they called ether, or ethereal realities. So ether was just a word that the Greeks came up for something which is non-physical, non-tangible. They called it ether. It's made of ether. The gods are made of ether. They said this world is made of four elements, of energy, and of solid and liquid and gas, and then there's ether. The gods made of ether. So when a person dies, they said the body is laid to rest and rots, and the soul evolves into an ethereal reality. It becomes, it metamorphoses into ether, they said. But in Egypt, that wasn't good enough. In Egypt, they couldn't wrap their heads around a spiritual reality that was eternal. They had to have a physical reality that would be eternal. So the Egyptians were the ones of the ancient world who mummified bodies so that the body should be preserved. And they filled these pyramids, these palaces, they filled them with gold and silver. They filled it with jugs of wheat. In fact, there was a U.S. airman who discovered a jug, a sealed jug of wheat that he was able to actually plant. Right? This is during World War II. And he actually sent it off to his father in Nebraska, and he planted it, and it grew extraordinary wheat. And for a long time, in American supermarkets on the shelves, there was something called King Tut's wheat. Can you imagine? Wheat, literally from antiquity, 3,000-year-old wheat, 37-century-old wheat that actually could grow because it was sealed so well. But this is what the Egyptians excelled at, preserving and keeping intact the physical and the material. We're finding bodies still, not frozen in Antarctica. We're finding bodies still. Whole bodies that are 4,000 years old, because they believe there could be no eternity, there could be no spirit without a body. So within the reality of this world, which is entirely materially and corporeally focused, Egypt represents the lowest possible reality where they couldn't see heaven at all. They couldn't even raise their eyes heavenward. There was no heaven. It was all about earth. It was about earthiness. So that's the lowest place on earth. Nimsa. So we find ourselves then informed. Hashedish v'ha'iker, u'balashan hazer, that the source of everything, the source and the primary, what's primary about everything. So this, it's not only the source. There are certain things which have a source, but then the source dissipates and now it moves on to something else. But then there's something which not only it's a source, but it's a primary function. It continues to seed, to give it life. In the language of the Zohar, ikra v'sharsha dekula, the root and the continued source of everything is the concept of this Dira B'Tachtonim. The Rebbe says something new now. The Rebbe suggests that contrary to the way people generally understood the idea of Ikra V'Sharsha to be referring to the source or the root in common form, the Rebbe says actually there are two things here. Number one, Shehu Shoyresh HaKol, that's the source of everything or the root of everything. So the root of everything is the concept of to make this dwelling place into a world, into a godly dwelling place, or that this Yerida should be a Tzairich Aliyah, that this descent should be for the purpose of an appropriate ascent that will follow. And that is the Shoyrish, that's the root source, that's what motivated everything, that's what got it all going, that's what started this process, that's what catalyzed this entire saga. Beis, the second thing is, Shagam la'achare sha'akol nimsa. Not only was this the reason everything was created, but it's ikar ha'akol. It's the reason everything exists. So that's not the same. It's not the same to say, like a person could say, I'm in a certain career path. How did I get into this career path? So, I got this career path because A, B, C, or D. Or I ended up doing this and this. What motivated this, what catalyzed this was such and such. But oftentimes, whatever catalyzed that decades earlier is not what they're really doing now anymore. So yeah, I started off here, I was a numbers guy, so I went into this, so that's why I'm doing this. I said, but how and why do you do what you do today? Oh, well, that's like totally different. That's long dissolved, that's long dissipated. Now I'm onto something else. I mean, similar, it was a path, it was a journey. And here we're saying, no. Not only is this the Shoyresh, not only is it the root source, not only is this what catalyzed and began the journey, but this is actually Iker. This is actually the primary function. So the reason that God created a world is because he wanted a Dira B'Tachtonim, because he wanted that there should be an Aliyah, an elevation that would follow this Yerida. But not only is that the case, not only that was the reason it all started, but that's why this all is. So if somebody starts to scratch the surface, I don't understand what's going on over here. You're telling me that Shaman came from the highest of places, came to the lowest of realities, and I don't understand why. What is the purpose? Why did it happen? You say, the real reason for all this, you know why this is the case? You know what we're really looking for? And the answer is to make an aliyah, to elevate. That's what it's about. Vehine, inyan zeh, this idea of it's all about the elevation that will follow, yeshnu gam bepratis ha'avedas ha'neshama lamata. This goes into the details. This actually permeates the details of what a neshama is supposed to do. She'ikir ma'ilas ha'aveda, hi ba'aveda ha'chi tachtayna. Which would mean then, that if a person has an array of things to accomplish here in this world, some of are of a loftier nature, and some of are more mundane or simple or foundational nature, which would be most important? Which would be, if you will, the lion's share of one's time? What would be the most a person would invest his or her efforts in Avodas Hashem into? The answer would be, contrary to what most would believe, the answer is Avodah Hachi Tachtonah, the lowest level of service to God. What's the lowest level of service to God? The highest level of service to God is service to God with passion. And even higher than that is service to God with clarity, with elevated consciousness. So a person could serve God with being souls on fire. A person could serve God, his mind is opened in an expansive way. He says clarity about certain things. Well, actually, no, that's not the primary foundation of Avodas Hashem. You know what the primary foundation of Avodas Hashem in the language of the Zohar is? Yirat HaTorah, the lower form of awe, not the higher form of awe. The lower form of awe is very basic. This is like what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told his students, I wish you would fear heaven like you fear the police officer or the camera that's watching you or the person that's looking over your shoulder. He said, that's it. That's like what you wish. He says, yeah, that would be pretty good. If you could be mindful at all times, as if you when a camera's watching you, mm-hmm. as if when somebody's watching, that would be amazing. So it's like a very low form. This is what we call Kabbalah Seil. A person is going to do the right thing. Why are you doing the right thing? Why are you getting up in the morning? It's more fun to sleep. Yes, chill out. You know, it's freezing cold outside. Why get up in the morning? I say, why? What's the purpose to life? Because of purpose. What's the purpose? This is a big Yerida. This is going to be a big Aliyah. And but what's the purpose? So a person, when he pulls himself out of bed in the morning, might not have the ability to articulate exactly what he or she seeks. Well, you know, I'm going to start off my day with an inspirational Torah thought, and then my day is going to be different because I'm going to feel inspired. Maybe at 6 o'clock in the morning, that doesn't really figure. What does figure? Kabbalas el malchus shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven. It's, why? Because that's what has to be done. It's almost like a mindless thing, not a mindful thing. This is because this is what I believe in, and if this is what I believe in, I got to accept that yoke, just like the ox who plows the field. I accept that yoke and I plod forward. Ukimavur b'tanya, like it says in Tanya, sheyira the kabbalas sel, that the very base level of awe, of being, so to speak, reverential before God, or taking life seriously, not the self seriously, life seriously, God seriously, the world seriously. That's the idea of Kabbalah soil, the idea of accepting the yoke, is Reishis HaAveda. That's what you start with. Little child isn't taught about amazing, profound, deep truths. He's a little child. He's taught this, what you have to do. And one of the challenges of children growing up in North America in the last 50 years is North American society increasingly mocks acceptance. Accept. Why should I accept anything? And this is only getting worse as the generations go. Accept? What should I accept anything for? That part of society is actually a diametric loggerhead with the Torah approach. Because the Torah approach is, the foundation is acceptance. Now, there are other beautiful things about society, ingenuity and creativity, and a willing to be bold and brave and look beyond and not accept the truths, and that has spawned many wonderful things. You know, to rebel against old paradigms, to be brave enough to seek a fresh new approach, that's good, that's a good thing. But this part is not a good thing. It doesn't lend itself well to Torah. And that's why when people came from the old country, educators did not understand what was going on. They were clueless, like, why aren't the kids just listening? Because American kids don't listen. Canadians are a drop better, a little more European style. Americans don't listen. Wilde Chayes, as they call them. Wild animals. But that is, in Yiddishkeit, the foundation of everything, the beginning. Where's his Reishis Chachma? What's the beginning of wisdom? Yiras Hashem. A sense of awe, a sense of reverence. It's called respect. Respect. Respect was the beginning, was the foundation. From a Torah perspective, respect is the foundation. But the Rebbe says, guess what? Not only is it the foundation, meaning that's where you begin the journey from, but in fact, that's what continues to sustain the journey. Not the profundity, not the passion, not the clarity and elevated consciousness, but the respect. And therefore, it remains not only Reishis HaAveda, but it remains Ikra, the source, the root, Visharsha. It remains the primary. The Eshleimer, the Rebbe once again here now is so to speak, forging a new path, going into new ground. Shagamba zebez in yonim. Here too, we can further split the hairs in a nuanced way and say, Shomavad zeis shehi sheder shumakar. Besides the fact that this is a root source, Shemizendim shachem kalapratim. The root is where all the details come from. So you have a rule, a general principle, and then you have details that come out later. So besides the fact that there's a rule where everything comes from, all the details come from, in addition to this, gam acharkach, even after, kishayeshnam kvar kol prati aveda, when we have the full gestalt developed with all the details already in place, Hayira hua ikir dechol inyan. The yira remains, the awe, the reverence remains the primary thing. Ukiloshan hazayar, like the language that the Zohar uses, where the sages were very precise and exact, ikra v'sharsha dekula. The ikir, the primary, and root, continued root of everything. In other words, loirak sharsha dekula, not only the root source of everything, elagam ikra, it still remains the primary essence. So for example, you could have a person who has a business and the business branches out into different directions and he invests in different areas, but still there's the basis of the business. So for the person who's a farmer, yeah, the farmer has real estate, yeah, the farmer has holdings, the farmer has he's been successful, but still what's at the root source of his wealth? What's the base of his wealth? His farm. His farm, the earth, the agriculture, the farming, whatever, that's what it is. That's what he is essentially. Yes, he does other things. He turns profits elsewhere, but as long as the base is in place, everything else can function. Funding comes in, funding comes out, there's a turnover, he's able to run his business, so to speak. And so it is also in our Yiddishkeit. The Rebbe is telling us, not only is Kabbalah's oil where it began from, but it's Kabbalah's oil that continues to enthuse, enliven, and energize the Avedis Hashem. And therefore, this is the Avedis, it's through this Aveda that we're Mamshech Atzmos Samhus, that we bring forth the essence of God. And that's why this is hinted at in the name Yaakov, which the name Yaakov, as we learned many times already, is Yud Ekev, taking the Yud, which represents the highest level, and bring it into Ekev, the heel. In other words, like we learned yesterday, that the heel is Malach HaMavos Sheba Adam. It's the lowest level of a person. In other words, that the Yud has to be brought down into the lowest common denominator. The Yeshleimar, the Rebbe says further, that specifically the lowest form of Yira, who sheidish v'ikir akol. Know why it is that the lowest form of Yira becomes the primary foundation for everything that follows? Besides the principle that everything that comes from a higher place will go to a lower place. In other words, the stones on the top of the wall when the wall collapses are the ones that that will experience the greatest breakage and they'll also be furthest away from the actual foundation when you want to rebuild the wall. So if it comes from a higher place, it goes to a lower place. Everything in this world has a spiritual source. The lowest realities have to have the highest sources. Besides this, all levels of respect are ultimately linked to one another. All levels of awe, of reverence are linked. That if you keep peeling away outer layers and keep going down to the quiddity, to the essence, to the source, what's the roots, what's the actual central fulcrum? Keep going down into the central point of Yira Tata, you'll end up with the Yud Tata, with the lowest Yud, and this Yud ultimately is the highest as well. Because Yira Tata, the lowest, the idea of bringing it down to the lowest common denominator, was something that comes from the highest form of everything. So it's the highest and loftiest form of reality that forms the nucleus, or the nuclei, which everything else is built around. And really what the Rebbe has done for us here is explained, at least we're out of time, but he began the explanation as to why the concept of Mitzrayim represents the idea of the Neshama coming down to this world, because we find the lowest common denominator, and we emphasize Yashrish, which comes from the word of sinking roots. That the roots of Mitzrayim, that the roots of the lowest Aveda, that becomes what funds, if you will, or energizes, or continues to enliven and give vitality to all of the Aveda that follows. And ultimately, because of this, Mitzrayim becomes not just a place where we survived, but the place where we flourished, where we triumphed, because it was from the lowest common denominator that the greatest of growth was able to ensue. And in fact, it's still the idea of the Mitzrayim, of the Mitzarim, of the limitations, of the Mitzrayim in our lives today that continue to catalyze fresh new growth. And there's much more to say, but we're out of time. Okay.